Hola.
If you want it, you got it. If you want it, baby, you got it.
You like that song?
Sure.
I never got into that song. It was goofy. It
Yeah.
was like a 90s song that was 70s retro, it felt like, didn't it?
It's got definitely got like a 70s
Like
beat to it or
a
something.
psychedelic, even the video.
Yeah, I think the video definitely.
Yeah, well, it's got like the flashing yellow and the bell bottoms and.
Yeah. She's dressed in yellow. She says, "Hello, come sit next to me, you fine fellow."
Ah, you're a great
I
rapper
guess
there.
I did definitely listen to that song a lot back when it was current.
Well, next
I'm
time
pretty
we
sure I
see each
had
other at a con, we're gonna have to have you karaoke
that tape.
that.
I could probably, yeah, I could handle that one.
Do you think you could?
Yeah.
Unassisted?
What do you mean, but without the
Without the
lyrics on the
words.
screen?
Yeah.
No, I think I would need
The lyrics.
the lyrics, at least most of them. At this point, at least, I don't know if I remember all of them. It's funny though, there's certain songs I memorized when I was a kid that it's funny how much of it I do remember.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it'd be interesting to try to memorize "It's the End of the World as We Know It."
That song I don't think I could do because of the speed.
Right.
It's just so fast. Like I'd love to do it because it's such an awesome song. And there was like one that Micah did at when we went to Heroes Con 1 year, which is the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And Anthony Kiedis could like the way he throws the words out really fast on some of the songs. It man, that would be another tough one to do.
Yeah, his style has a lot in common with rap.
Yeah. Micah pulled it off though, man. I was impressed.
That's cool. So yeah, you're switching back and forth between your co-hosts.
Yeah.
One of these days we'll all make it, but it's Mother's Day as we're recording.
Yeah. And I take it that your mother's not close to you, or you
She's
just didn't
close
have any
enough, but
plans.
we don't really have plans today. I saw my mother-in-law last night and don't really have plans to see my mom. We sent her some flowers and I'll talk to her today.
Ah.
But,
My mom is in Boulder today with my brother.
okay.
She was here Thursday.
Gotcha. Yeah, so and then our wives are moms of dogs, but and that counts.
Yeah.
But it's not as much responsibility as
And cats for you, right?
yeah, a dog and a cat, yeah. It's not as much responsibility in terms of like us having to remember to, do something special,
Yeah, well,
I guess.
they're not our mamas.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's all on the dog and the cat to do something.
Yeah. And Harley doesn't seem to know it's any different than any other day. Harley, it's
Yeah.
Mother's Day. Love your mama.
Give her the keys to the car so she can go buy her a card.
And the way she responded to that is she came over here by me. She left her side. Harley Quinn. It's your mama. Yeah, we just got back from our walk not too long ago. I've been taking her on a lot of them. So like I've been doing a lot of steps.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I've been doing about like, I don't know, 19,000 a day.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
How do you know? Do you have a Fitbit that you don't
Yeah. Well, it's
share?
not a Fitbit, it's a little another device.
Yeah, but you have some kind of pedometer.
If it was a Fitbit, I would challenge you.
You'd be winning if you're doing 19. I mean, they say the goal is to try to get 10,000.
Yeah. But I do a lot. Like I do a half hour to 40 minutes on the elliptical in the morning, and then I go for the walk, and then I take Harley on another walk, and then I go on the elliptical again at night.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a lot of steps. But I'm still eating like a bastard. So there's not a lot of weight loss.
Yeah, you gotta do both.
Yeah.
Are you still doing oatmeal for breakfast, or have you gone back to
I've
little
been eating toast.
children's
Oh,
cereal?
I do eat my sugar-filled Rice Krispies. And last week I
Yeah.
had Lucky Charms. I don't eat any of that grain shit that you and Barb eat. I bet you're a Raisin Bran guy.
No, I did used to do cereal, but I switched over to oatmeal to try to lower my cholesterol. And
You know, I got a bad batch of oatmeal. Like it was just weird tasting. Like the last two
it's
boxes,
the ha have chiggers in it or something?
I don't know. It just loved it before, and then this last two boxes I bought just, it's like these big old flakes, and they, I don't know, they taste really dry, and I just, it took me off the oatmeal.
Is it just plain oatmeal or is it
No, I
flavored
got
or something?
like flavored, like the apple cinnamon, I think it is, and oh, there's a bird feeding a little baby, Barb. Yeah, look, hurry before he stops. Oh, you missed it. That red one's feeding that one on the banister. I think those two are babies. Yeah, they don't have any color. So this one's getting seed, and he's just like going over there, and that he just flies over there and just feeds it, drops it all into his mouth.
It's a Mother's Day celebration in your backyard.
Yeah. They're pretty fascinating to watch, especially when I'm on the deck. Yesterday I was on the deck. I love reading on the deck. Like that's my favorite thing. If it's not too windy,
Yeah.
I'll go on the deck and read comic books. And the birds don't normally they'll like fly away when I'm reading out there, but when Harley's out there, they don't give a shit. Like even yesterday, I'm walking Harley, right? And we're on the walk, and there was a bunny feeding the little rabbit from its teat. It was sucking on its teats. And this little rabbit was tiny and saw Harley. You know, the mother probably said, "Hey, there's a dog. You need to run away." And Harley just walks by, looks at him, you know, takes a glance, and keeps on walking. I'm like,
Man.
it's like they're gonna be conditioned to like, you know, they know what the norm is, and then all of a sudden there's the exception to the rule.
Yeah. Yeah, Mabel's definitely the norm. She'd definitely be going after. Actually,
Yes.
she caught a rabbit one time.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I wish Harley would keep the rabbits away, 'cause they're breeding like it's nobody's business. We
That's their reputation.
don't have any predators for 'em in our yard. We have had a bird of prey in our yard, but I haven't seen him since that one day. I was like, "Yes." That's what we need.
Kind of bird was it?
It was a little like falcon. Barb was all excited. She's like, "Mike, there's a bird of prey on the fence." I'm like, "That's awesome."
Yeah, that was probably like her highlight of the
Yeah,
month.
it's like a hawk. I wish they would be more in this area, but they probably don't have We're about a quarter of a mile away from like the Sand Creek, where they have a lot more trees and stuff. They probably hang out there. That is what I would guess.
That's what I was thinking too. You know that Sand Creek?
The Sand Creek.
Is that what you said?
The Sand Creek, yeah. Sandy.
Right. Like when you're at the beach and you get some down the back of your swimming trunks.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Well, I don't know. That's just what made me think of.
The Sand Creek.
Speaking of, did you hear me talking about you? What are you doing?
She's got a Sand Creek.
I hope not. She'd be displaying it for everybody if she did.
If she did, would she be dragging her ass on the carpet?
Maybe we got mostly hardwoods, though, fortunately. No ass dragon. Ass dragon. That sounds like a fantasy monster. Beware the evil ass dragon.
Ass dragon.
His fart is worse than his flame breath.
That's right.
I think that's what they called Keith Knutson in college.
The ass dragon.
The ass dragon.
I'm sure. I'm sure of it.
Or maybe just on DC Noise.
So we have some questions. I thought we'd start with those.
Okay.
And one of them's really appropriate. Alan Middleton says, favorite moms in comics? That's a good question. Very appropriate.
Yeah, thematic. What are some moms in? Well,
Well, Sue Storm.
I know that's what I was just gonna say.
It,
It's like the
you're
first one I thought
is,
of.
isn't it the first one that comes to mind?
Yeah.
Like it would be interesting to have like a family feud of geeks where they ask like 100 geeks what's the top moms in comics.
Yeah.
I think Sue Storm would make the top five for sure.
I agree.
Because as far as family, you always think of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and then
You could say Jessica Jones, but she's pretty foul-mouthed and
and
Yeah,
well, I think another thing with Sue is that her son has been prominent in some stories too.
and
Franklin.
daughter.
Right, oh yeah,
Val
true.
Val Valeria.
Both of them. Oh, Mabel.
Well, Valeria is like super smart. Like I think she can even surpass her dad at certain
Right.
points. Not in maturity, but in intelligence.
Oh. Sorry.
What is she
Mabel
doing?
just attacked me. She's got a flaming this flamingo, squeaky flamingo that she loves, and she just jumped at me with it in her mouth. Plus mic on my headset, it's like starting to get limp.
Why?
Keeps sagging down on my chin. I don't know why. I think it's just been used too much.
Well, I've had two problems with my stuff. I hardly destroyed the mic that I loved. Like, I never had problems with it. Matter of fact, I should make sure I'm recording. I'm glad that. Where the hell is it? Yeah, I'm recording. Are you recording? Chris?
Oops, I.
Hit the mic. Are you recording?
Yeah, yep. I didn't
Okay.
start it right away though, so all that gold, we
Ah.
might lose some of that gold quality conversation,
Oh,
but
we'd lose you singing.
yeah,
Yeah.
unfortunately,
Do you
the world
hear?
will be lesser.
Barb's laughing because she can hear Mabel.
Jeez. Mabel.
It's like when Harley does it, but Harley can only do like 10 minutes, and then she passes out.
She wants to. She it's something about she wants to be a part of the podcast. She wants to talk. She
Yeah.
hears me talking, so she's like, "Oh, then are you saying that you want to play with me? This thing is a mess, Mabel. This flamingo is all torn up. Crazy town." But anyways, what are some good moms and comics,
Well,
Mabel?
you could say Kate Spencer, the
Well,
Manhunter. She had that son, that Iron Munro, who's her father, grandfather, was taking care of. I don't know if you
yeah.
read The Manhunter,
I
but
read a few issues of that run, but I don't remember her having a
she
kid.
was a good, strong single mother.
Nowadays, Lois is becoming a really prominent one.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Because, Jonathan's becoming such a prominent character.
Yeah, that's a
And
very good one.
they definitely focus on like the family dynamic in Rebirth
Yeah.
with them as with her and Clark as parents and stuff. Ouch. So Tali would not be a good mother,
No, she's not a good mother.
but she's a well-known one, I'd say. And for not being in the comics a lot, but being important to the comics, Martha Wayne.
Yeah.
Well, both Marthas, Martha Wayne and Martha
Kent.
Kent, and I mean they basically indirectly stopped the battle, right, between Batman and
Well,
Superman. Everyone
I
sugar.
would I would say that we know Martha Kent a lot more than Martha Wayne, just
Oh yeah.
in sheer amount of stories.
Oh, thanks, Mabel. Sure, yeah, I mean Martha's more defined by just Martha Wayne is defined more as just the a
Iconic,
motivation
yeah.
for Batman.
Well, Tom King's playing on that. The mother thing.
Bringing it like, oh, you mean how historically it's been a little more focused
On
on
the father,
father? Yeah.
yeah. Let's see, Stargirl's parents are pretty cool. I don't remember the mother too much, but I remember she married Stripesy, which was from Star Spangled Kid, the Seven
Right.
Soldiers of Victory.
A couple are.
Oh, that's mu I don't know his mother.
Who?
Let me
Jack
see.
who?
I was thinking of Jack Knight. But
Oh.
I don't remember them telling too many stories about his mother. I know there was a
Yeah.
lot about his father.
A couple mothers that have been on my are on my mind right now just because of what I've been looking at for from Kid to Flash are on the next episode I'm covering the issues where they revealed who the father of Cheshire's daughter was. And Cheshire, she's a mom.
She's not a good one, though.
No.
No, because she seems to only drop in when it's convenient for her. She lets Roy raise him on his own.
Yeah, I mean
I'm
initially
not
she,
impressed by her.
right. Yeah, I guess I've gone off just to thinking in, of any moms. One interesting thing is so also related to the podcast, it's interesting how I'm getting close now to getting into Wally Soul series, and it was interesting how they in the Silver and Bronze Age, Wally's mom didn't really have much of a personality, and she was just kind of a generic good mom and didn't really do much in the stories. But then the beginning of his solo series, she is pretty prominent and living with him for a while.
Yeah.
and they really like made her personality a little bit more complex. And
Well, his dad was
Mike Barron
a manhunter,
did.
right?
Yeah, that's definitely not a part of my that's not a part of my headcanon, as they call it. I was reading, I was looking back at the Secret Origins Annual number 2, where it was the first time post-Crisis that they did Wally's origin again,
Yeah.
and that is all over it. Like, at least 3 times they talk about Wally's dad turning out to be a manhunter, and I was just like, like every time they mention it, I'm like, no,
Well,
nope, cross that
I
out.
don't remember much about his father other than he wasn't well, I mean, he wasn't well received as a father, like being a good father.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff
And that was
definitely.
be that was before they revealed him to be a manhunter, so it was probably easy for them to say, okay, we have to make choices on who's a manhunter and who's not. Oh, let's make Wally's father a manhunter.
Yeah.
But you know who another good mother I would say is? Even though she's not biologically his mother, is Aunt May
Yeah.
with Peter Parker. That is his mother. And raised him.
Right.
I
Yeah.
mean.
That probably, if you're, yeah, just you're talking about not strictly biological mothers, but mother figures, is besides Sue Storm, I would say Aunt May actually qualifies as probably one of the best.
How about Ma Huckle? She raised those brats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she was the Red Tornado.
Yeah, I know of her, but I didn't realize that she was Granny Goodness. Just kidding.
Oh God. That's got to be the worst mother that you could ask for.
Yeah. She's horrifying.
Trying to
I
think
want.
of there's got to be a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, we probably got some of the most prominent ones, though, because even though it hasn't always. Well, I mean, speaking of Wally, farther down the line, Linda Park ended up becoming a mother towards the end of, pre-Flashpoint.
Yeah, with
They had
had two
twins.
cats that had powers. One had speed and one absorbed the boy. Didn't he lose his powers too and he got frustrated?
Yeah, I
One of
almost felt like
them lost power.
they started. He did, yeah. They started to. I don't know. I thought that at the time they were planting some seeds of like him going like down a darker path than his sister.
Yeah.
It's just those stories never really came to fruition because of the New 52, but. But yeah, they tend to. I know it was an actual editorial mandate during the New 52 for. But both publishers over the years have sort of de-emphasized families or not had a lot of actual mothers and fathers in comics because they kind of keep them at an age where they're not really. They don't really have those responsibilities, or if they do, it's a young kid. We
Yeah.
don't see a lot of them actually doing actually mothering and fathering. But I wonder if there's. It makes me wonder though if there are some good examples outside of superheroes, Marvel and DC superheroes, where you might actually.
There's that one mother that's God, I can't remember if it's the Dynamite one or the one that is an assassin. And drugs her family before she goes out on her missions. It's either Jennifer Blood or there's another one that's a crazy mother too.
Oh, I can almost picture it. Lady Killer, isn't it?
Yeah, Lady Killer.
Yeah. Another, not outside of that, but I sort of thought of it because it eventually became Vertigo, was Animal Man's wife, is it Ellen
Oh
Baker?
yeah, that's a big one. And plus they had kids.
Right, I would say that she's a pretty fantastic mother, the way that because you really, both in the Vertigo series and then when Jeff Lemire did the New 52 one, there they show a lot of her coping with Buddy and his exploits and dealing with their daughter and her powers and all of that stuff. So I'd say she's a big one. And actually, she's fresh on my mind because of Alan, his Quarter Bin podcast. He covered a couple issues of Animal Man on it not that long ago.
Yeah.
Brought it back to mind.
Well, that's a good one.
Those are some good ones, yeah. Good question. Very
Very
appropriate.
appropriate. And we have a few others. Dallo Spicer says, "Reading so many comic books, how do you recall the story after a month or more break? Do you reread the previous issue?" I guess he's talking about reading monthlies. I don't usually have problem unless I like sit on it for a long time.
Yeah.
And usually I'd say 60 to 70% of the time the writer's good enough to get you back into it.
Right.
Just through a few thought bubbles, and oh yeah, I remember what happened.
Yeah, for especially for a good portion of comic book history, I don't know if it's as I don't know if writers are as good at it nowadays because they know that people have the internet and they have the convenience of digital and things like that, and people are collectors and keep stuff in their collections and stuff. But for a good long, for the majority of comic book history, that was something that, as a writer, I think you're kind of expected to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that you're not supposed to expect that people knew what had happened last time.
Well, back
But
when it really was like told in a periodical sense, in other words, there weren't no collected editions or anything, they did a good job of always, like, you read a Silver Age or Bronze Age, you more or less can get into the story. It's
most.
hard to be lost.
Right.
With current DC, it's a lot easier to be lost because they don't recap anything. The Marvel Comics, they have that front page. The Valiant Comics, they have that front page. I noticed a lot of indies are starting to do that. Like the
That's
inside front
cool.
cover, they'll just say previously, and then you could read that. For me,
Yeah, I love that they do that. I wish DC would.
yeah.
Yeah, for me, a lot of times, I mean, I read older comics more than I do new. So a lot of times I'll read a good stretch of stuff in a shorter period of time, but I do definitely pick up where I left off sometimes a year later. The only reason a lot of times I know where to pick up is because I have my little document where I keep track of what I read, so I'll do like a find search and find the last issue I read. And so a lot of times I do think more often than not I'm able to just pick up with the next issue and a lot of it will come back to me because of what we're talking about, because of the way that they're written. They were written in that way to jog your memory. And I do sometimes rely on the internet, though. If there's something I really don't remember, a lot of times just a quick Google search will jog my memory. But if I'm away for something for long enough, like 5, 10 years or something like that, if it's something I really want to go back to that much, it's probably something that's worth rereading, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes I just feel like rereading, like, for example, last week or the week before, there was a Comixology sale on stuff that had to do with Bane, and I bought all three Nightcrawler It's Quest trade paperbacks.
Yeah.
And even though I had read the first one before, the actual Knight's Quest, up until Jean Paul Valley becomes Batman, I just reread it because I felt like it, and then that got me. I probably could have just jumped into the second volume because I've never read Knight's Quest and Knight's End before,
Yeah.
and that was really sort of my motivation. But I just felt like rereading the first volume. So sometimes I just reread just to want to be if I feel like it's worth it. It's a good enough story, or if it's if I just feel like being really fresh and not at all try not. Not need to try to catch up at all.
It's not hard for me to remember stuff if it's a 4 out of 5 or a 5 out of 5. It's the ones that are threes or below. I sometimes forget. But if I really enjoy something, it's hard for me to forget what happened in it. I wonder what Harley's doing. She's on top of the swing. She's acting really weird, like she's got a smell of something, but I don't know what she's doing. We have a porch swing, if you will, on our deck, and it's destroyed because of hail. We still haven't bought a new
Oh,
one.
yeah.
Like, we can't sit in it anymore. And she was up on that. I don't know what she's doing. It's like she smells squirrel or something. I don't know what's going on. We have squirrels too.
Oh, yeah, we got lots of squirrels here.
They love Barb when she feeds, because she puts this one feeder like where they can like go on the ledge of the deck and eat seed. But
Speaking
yeah, that
of, actually, speaking of Hale, did you see Mile High Comics?
no, what?
I thought it was Mile High Comics that got hit with hail.
Oh, really? We've had some bad hailstorms. I wonder if it's their big store. I mean, where did you see that at?
I think it was originally on Bleeding Cool that I saw it, but
Huh.
I'm looking at,
Maybe they have a hail sale. Their big store, it would be hard to believe if they got a hail damage, though, because it's like a concrete warehouse. Like, man, their roof would for that building would have to be really thin to damage it, because it looks like a concrete bunker.
Well, it looks like the problem was that they have skylights.
Oh.
42 beautiful skylights disintegrated.
Oh, man.
yeah, they have a thing on their website. I'll put the link into.
A
It
hail
looks like they
sale.
had a lot of damage.
I can't imagine what it would do. Like, I'm pretty sure the books that are worth a lot of money are protected because they're usually within glass. You know what I mean? Like, if you go into
Right.
their store, a lot of them are protected with cabinets or glass containers, the more expensive books. It's the ones that are in the long boxes that are on the main hall that would have probably been bombarded, but they're the cheaper books. Like the more expensive books, they're all protected within like filing cabinets and such.
Yeah, I put the link into Skype, but it does say that they estimate they lost $30,000 to $50,000 in
Holy
product.
moly. They have toys and stuff too that could have been damaged that are out in the middle of it.
Yeah. Man, Colorado doesn't mess around with hail.
Yeah, I before that before our last hailstorm, I never used to get scared. And now when it starts hailing, I get scared. Like,
Well,
I'm
I
like,
think
what
that's
kind of
natural.
damage is it gonna do, you know? And we were just fortunate enough that like a lot of houses, it penetrated the skylight, but because it came in at the angle that it did, like if we were facing south, we probably would have lost our skylight, but we're not, so we were okay.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy hail.
Yep. So we have one other question. I take this to the retro because this isn't really a retro question, but let's make it a retro question. John Sid says, "What are your three favorite comic book series at the moment? What retro books are you currently into?"
Am I currently into? Well, I'm currently into the Batman and Detective Comics from the 90s because I've been reading,
Nightfall, Night Quest.
yeah, the Night Saga. What else have I been reading?
I'm into a couple of properties and they're like Marvel related. Ghost Rider I'm really into right now, and this is the Danny Ketch, except he's not in the book right now. And Punisher I'm really into, and I need to buy more because I'm missing a lot of them, and I need to read these things. And they're finally coming out with a Punisher epic. I saw Campbell posted
Yeah, I saw that too.
an epic collection on the Punisher. I would love for them to do the same thing with Ghost Rider. Even though the Ghost Riders, I own most of the, what do you call it, the essentials. But Danny Ketch isn't in there. That's all essential Johnny Blaze. But I'm really into Ghost Rider. I'm really into the darker stuff right now. Ghost Rider and Punisher, I'm really enjoying a lot. And on the DC side, I'm into Captain Atom. I'm learning a lot about Golden Age Captain Atom, which I don't know a lot about. And well, I guess it's more, I don't, it's hard to tell. These were 1960s, so I would say Golden Age, 'cause like, was it 1963 when Flash came out? Or what year did Showcase come out? Showcase number
Showcase
four
number four, you mean? That
yeah,
was
that reeled in the,
56, I
oh,
think.
was that long ago?
Yeah.
Showcase. Yeah, it was 56. So, yeah, this is Silver Age, definitely.
Yeah, I was just looking at some of that stuff the other day. Some of those Silver Age beginning dates as it happens. But speaking of the Silver Age, another thing that I was into is, especially in the month of April, I was reading a lot of 60s Marvel again. I periodically go back to, and speaking of picking up where I left off, that's just like a periodic thing I go back to is reading my way through that stuff. And if I had to pick one series out of that I was enjoying last month is were the Iron Man stories. I was kind of impressed with a story. There was an interesting storyline that lasted a couple issues where he was stuck in his armor. So
What period was this? What issue, around what range?
Let me see. It was Tales. So it was when he was still in Tales of
Tales of
Suspense.
Suspense. Oh, okay.
Yeah, like it looks like 60, 61, 62, like around there. It was right either right before or right around the same time that Captain America ended up being the split feature with him.
Yeah.
And but it was an interesting storyline. It was kind of funny because Happy and Pepper were really distrustful of Iron Man. You know, at that time he was still thought to be Tony's bodyguard, and Tony could not get out of his armor because of, you know, it was like his whole life support. and something was wrong, like he couldn't charge up his situation that he's got there, so he had to stay. Something or other happened. They had to stay inside the Iron Man suit. So basically, he had to pretend that Tony Stark was missing, and as Iron Man say that Tony told him to run things while he was gone, but everyone was really, especially Pepper and Happy, were really suspicious of Iron Man, and it was kind of neat because you can kind of see as the 60s go on, cliffhangers become a little more prevalent. Because really, that was something that when the Comics Code Authority first came down, I've heard that they sort of frowned on cliffhangers. But by this point, Marvel was already kind of testing the waters on those, and they would have the cliffhangers, and they would have stories end where you didn't know if the hero was gonna win, And it had some neat cliffhangers. So that storyline kind of stood out for me. So that's another one I can think of recently.
Cloak and Dagger, I've been reading that Epic Collection. That's been a lot of fun. Not Epic Collection. Epic Collection that is an Epic Collection, but it's not advertised as an Epic Collection.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we talked about that. Actually, towards the end of March or April, I had picked up that Black Panther Epic Collection. And that was another one I was digging, was reading those Don McGregor Jungle Action storyline. Checking that out. Yeah, so that's
And
a few for
I've
me.
been reading some Legion of Superheroes around issue 300.
Oh, cool.
That's been fun. But those are good questions. So, Chris, what do you got for us this week?
Let me see here.
Harley Quinn Myers.
Is she still on the swing?
No, she's inside now, but she's asking. I don't know if you could hear, but I let her in, let her out, let her in, let her out, let her in, let her out
Yeah.
constantly.
I usually do hear the sliding door. I didn't this time.
Well, I'm not. I haven't let her out yet.
All right. I'll start with Superman 402. That's volume one. It is from around 1984. On the cover, it's Superman. He's got some stubble, and he's leaning on a trash can in an alleyway. He says, "You got to believe me. I am Superman. Help me." There's somebody's shadow. It's called "How Do You Hide a Superman" by Kerry Bates, Kurt Swan, Bob Oskner, Gene D'Angelo, and Ben Oda.
That's a
That's it.
good cover. I like it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
I like Kerry Bates Superman. He's one of my
Yeah,
favorites.
I know you did, Carrie.
Kerry Bates Flash and Kerry Bates Superman,
Yeah.
top of my list.
Yeah, and this is pretty close. This is getting towards the, end of this volume. How do you hide a Superman? Well, it starts out with a split page. There's a guy named Justin who's a rookie reporter at the Daily Planet that's walking out of the Daily Planet at the same time that someone Superman appears to be having difficulty, or he says, "Too perilous to remain airborne, must hide, hide." But Justin, while he's walking out of the Daily Planet, he says, or he's thinking to himself, "Don't worry about it," she says. "It happens to all of us once in a while. Well, maybe so, Lois, but it never happened to Mrs. Moore's brilliant son, Justin, before, and not till today. So I guess, I don't know, it sounds like Justin's having some performance anxiety or something like that there. So Justin, he keeps walking, he's thinking to himself, actually it turns out that maybe he just, he's had some writer's block, which I guess is not dissimilar. But he hears a voice from a nearby alley and asking for help. Like on the cover, he finds a Superman who's like huddled under a trench coat against a bunch of boxes. And he also, Superman tells him, I seem to have lost my powers and I've lost some of my memory. The city seems strange to me. And so Justin agrees to help him, and then there's a loud noise, and Superman says, oh no, it's them. And there's this partially visible flying vehicle with men in strange armor in it, who Superman says that they are the murderous marauders from the far future, and that they're the ones that were responsible for taking his powers away. And that now he's not invulnerable. If they get another shot at him, that he won't survive it. So they haven't been seen by the Marauders yet. So they get out of there as quickly as they can. It seems like they saw the Marauders as they were materializing out of their cloaking device. That they're using to fly around in the 20th century without being detected. So Justin takes Superman through the sewers, and they exit the sewers right outside the Superman Museum. Superman, his powers aren't completely gone. He's still got a little bit of powers that he's able to use some heat vision to short circuit the alarm system, and he's able to, you know, get a running start and ram one of the walls with his shoulder and break through. So they get into the Superman Museum. So they're walking around the museum. Justin is worn out. So he lays down and he says, I'm going to grab myself some sack time here. Justin's got a real way with words and finding ways to put some euphemisms into things. While Superman goes around and takes a look at some exhibits, and Justin dreams of being able to publish a story about how he saved Superman, and how Lois Lane is so pleased with him. She gives him a kiss on his cheek and stuff. Well, interestingly enough, even though this isn't billed as like a crossover or anything, but we have a sort of a monitor appearance here. The Marauders, they take their ship into outer space, and they talk about there's this monitor that they've heard of, and that they're going to trade him components made out of titanium that they have, which is common in their area or in their era, and get some information from the monitor. So meanwhile, Superman
still. That's
pretty
early.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of funny, though. So we don't see them.
I wonder if they intended it to be the same monitor, or if it's another monitor.
I don't. I think it's supposed to be the monitor. He says, "What if what you say is accurate, that this monitor person amassed his vast amounts of data in this era for nefarious purposes, what makes you believe he will provide us with the information we seek?" And then it's kind of funny later, we don't see him meet with the monitor, But we do see them coming out of the monitor's satellite, though. And the two marauders say, "I concur. The information was costly indeed. I believe 20th century Earthers have an expression for what we just endured: highway robbery." But the monitor gives them the coordinates where they can properly find Superman. And yeah, eventually they catch up. But not before Superman starts to act really strangely. He starts to be more antagonistic towards Justin, and starts to believe that Justin is in league with the Marauders, and actually tries to starts to actually try to attack Justin. Justin stops him by grabbing the bottle City of Kandor. So at this point, the bottle City of Kandor is just a replica. It had already been recreated on a planet, another planet. So I keep wanting to call him Jimmy. Justin, he saw Superman observing the bottle replica earlier and talking about it as if there were still miniature Kryptonians in there. So Justin tests that theory by threatening to throw the Battle City down, and it works. But he actually has to throw it and smash it. So Superman's even more pissed because he thinks that Justin just murdered tons of Kryptonians. But as Justin's running away from Superman, all of a sudden, Superman crashes through the ceiling above him and in front of him. He thinks somehow that Superman got ahead of him, but the Superman that's in ha ahead of him doesn't have stubble all over his cheeks. And so Justin suddenly finds himself stuck between two Supermen. And just like that, it's all over with as the real Superman easily takes out the what has turned out to be a fake Superman. As the Marauders catch up, it turns out that the Superman that Justin has been with throughout this issue, the one with the stubble, is a man from the from their era, named Gila, who believes that he has a mental delusion that he is the 40th century reincarnation of Superman. So he used advanced technology to alter his features and voice to make himself look and sound like Superman. And so they basically take him back to their era, and that's the end of the story. There is a backup though, called Jor-El Superman by E. Nelson Bridwell and Wayne Boring. In this story, Jor-El wakes up in Clark Kent's body, wondering where the heck he is. And he's confused and trying to figure out what's going on. So he kind of figures out he sort of acts as Superman for a little while. It turns out that it was the fault of Kruel, his cousin, on Kryptonian and on Krypton.
Cruella de
He,
Vil, isn't that the 101
yeah,
Dalmatians?
Cruella de Vil, yeah. But yeah, that and a grand history of comic book villains having names that seem to have predestined them to be villainous. His name is Kruel. I know he was like in that World of Krypton miniseries and stuff like that. But so yeah, he knocked out Jor-El in the past and then put him into this mind transfer device, and somehow sent his mind into the future into into his son's mind. And Superman wakes up in Jor-El's body in the past. But yeah, somehow Superman, he doesn't have any powers in Jor-El's body on Krypton, but he does have his knowledge of Klucor, the Kryptonian martial art. So that's what he uses to take down Kruel. And then he gets sent to the Phantom Zone, and then he puts himself into the mind transfer device and reverses the process. So it's funny. I mean, this issue is good, and it's in hindsight, though, it like you can see at the time that the Superman books were kind of in need of a refresh, like the refresh that they gave Superman post-Crisis, just to kind of catch up with the storytelling of the time. Because if you think about when this came out, like, and you look at what was going on in New Teen Titans and like Legion of Superheroes. Just to look at DC examples, you know, like the New Teen Titans had done Judas Contract, they're launching like the Baxter volume. And the storytelling was a lot more like of the time and of the 80s. And while I enjoyed this issue, like reading it now, I can see how at the time it kind of was definitely holding over, like as far as the plots go,
Yeah.
holding on to a lot of like early Bronze Age, late Silver Age kind of storytelling, or at least in terms of the plots, you know. But they were fun to read now.
Well, I guess I learned something new. When you say the monitor, I always think of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I was just looking while you were talking that Wolfman conceived the concept of the character, you know, in 1982. So like his first appearance in Shadows is New Teen Titans Volume 2, Number 21. But he's not seen. But in his first full appearance, which I don't own, is GI Combat 274, which I find really interesting. Now I have to buy that issue. GI Combat 274.
I think that one's kind of hard to find for that reason.
Yeah, it might
But
be.
yeah, I mean, they started seeding appearance of the monitor around that time, and it did lead to some inconsistencies that they sort of had to write in an explanation of that, because at first he was just kind of a like an arms dealer. And ultimately, like in
Yeah, in
Crisis,
space, yeah, Weaponeer in space, yeah.
it's just sort of explained in the beginning of Crisis that he was doing all that to evaluate and test the heroes and decide upon the ones that he calls to his satellite in the first issue of Crisis. But there's a lot before you get to the official actual Crisis crossover issues. There's a lot of like places that he just popped up and Lyra as well, and some like the depiction of the monitor and the Lyra isn't always consistent, because they only had like the writers that weren't Marv Wolfman, they only had so much information to go on, and they weren't always consistent with each other. But
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. But I don't think I, like, pre-Crisis, I wasn't getting too much DC. I was getting Superman, Flash, Titans and stuff, Legion of Superheroes, and Wonder Woman. And yeah, I've bought a lot since then, but like that was what I was getting off the shelf. Oh, and Batman and Detective, of course. Action Comics. So the main characters, Flash, Green Lantern, Superman, Wonder Woman, Justice League. That's interesting. And it being a lover of GI Combat, I don't have this issue.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at.
I will have it though. I need to order myself a few more Punishers. I think that's a good strategy, is just like to buy them like in tens. Like I'll get 10 more issues of Punisher and read that. And I just bought a full run of What If. So I
Oh yeah,
have
I
all the
saw
What
you
If.
posted that picture of it, yeah.
I had fun looking at the titles because it's just amazing to me how close some of them came to reality or were reality. Like you got the Jane Foster thing, you got the what if Hulk was a barbarian, a glad, you know, like a barbarian, which is close to being a gladiator, and the, you know what I mean? There's just a lot of things that Spider-Man did become a member of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just it's incredible to look at these and see what really came true. But
It also makes you wonder if writers sometimes are like stuck for an idea. They just browse the what if titles to see if like, oh, that's a good idea. Make Jane Foster for Thor.
well, I wonder if like Jason Aaron was reading What If back in the day, you know? It's like
Yeah.
this story had a big influence on me or something. Or if it's just coincidental. It would be interesting. I'll ask him that if he has usually a huge line though, and I don't wait in lines. But we'll see if he's at Heroes or something. So my choice this week is a DVD, and I started watching it. Me and Bill Bomer have been talking about the Max a lot, or Sam Keith in general, and I didn't like the Max back then. It was too weird for me when Image launched it. It was like, what the hell is this? You know, is he in the outback or is he a homeless guy or what's really happening? I don't know. I don't have a clue. And not only did I not like what was going on, but I wasn't a Sam Keith fan at the time. I didn't like the way he over-exaggerated things, but
Right.
I didn't like Kirby when I was a kid either. So it wasn't until like the late 80s, early 90s that I grew fond of Jack Kirby's artwork and became a huge fan of the DC stuff. And here I am many, many, many years later, like when I started to really like Sam Keith. So I watched the first two episodes of MTV's Oddities, which had the Max in it. And it says this cartoon covers Darker Image number 1, the Max number 1 half, and issues 1 through 11. And it's a very interesting, and I think it's like a political statement on the climate too. And there's a lot of undertones about rape and all kinds of creepiness. But Mr. Gone is like kidnapping women. I think he's responsible for having these little black creatures that call Julie and say like, I'm watching you and I'm coming after you and do threatening things. And Julie's a social worker and she tries to help people. She doesn't like politics of the situation. She dresses really weird. Like it's very sexual. She'll like wear jeans and then she'll have holes where the ass is and like have netting there. So she's got like really holy jeans with bell bottoms, and I like her as a character. Like I think she's the driving force of the series. And the Max, the way he opens up is he's a homeless guy. He's in the box and he's reminiscing about Cheers. He's thinking about how when the coach died and then Sam took over the bar. I think his name was Sam. And so he's thinking about Cheers. And then there's this girl where the taxi driver leaves her off near the alley instead of taking her, and she's pissed. She's like, "You dropped me off in the wrong place, you bastard." And then there's these two guys come to steal her purse and take her change. And the Max just comes out of his box, you know, as a homeless guy, and starts beating the crap out of these dudes. And then the cops show up and they arrest the Max, which is weird because they said these guys were going about their business. They couldn't find the woman because the woman was taken by Mr. Gone. And meanwhile, the reports on the TVs and stuff are talking about like a serial killer that's taking women. And there's one scene in a laundromat where there's this girl, and I guess the guy's talking to her. Your father bought you a knife and a gun, and he says, "Yeah, he wants to protect me." And he's sitting there grabbing her ass, and she gets real offended. And they're, you know, doing their laundry together, and she says, "Get away from me." And he goes, "Yeah, but we're kind of dating, so I kind of expect it from you." And he walks off, but the He actually gets Mr. Gone comes and takes her too. Meanwhile, the Max is in jail, and they call Julie and say, "Hey, your friend's back in jail. I need you to come pick him up." And she comes and lets him spend the night. And that's kind of how it ends. And then he has a bunch of flashbacks of the Australian outback, and there's these weird creatures. He talks about these slugs that like jump in the air, like they could jump a mile into the air and then they just land and die. And then there's these white creatures that are just a head with feet. And he says they have no predators, but they eat everything. And he says, "Well, I'm one of their predators," and he kills them. But Mr. Gone has these creatures, except they're all black. They're called the Iz, I think they're called. And man, it's a weird series. It's really weird, but there's even a scene where they pan around like all the people in the neighborhood block, and you go into their windows and you kind of see them, and you'll see that half of them, when the light flashes on and off, is that they're monsters from the Australian outback, and half of them are real people. So it's very odd. But it's really cool. I'm glad I bought the DVD. I never saw it before.
Yeah, it's kind of taken me back because I think maybe I have seen a little bit of the animated. I remember reading the first couple issues back when they came out, and it was definitely different from the other Image stuff that was coming out. And but I was curious about anything that Image was putting out at the very beginning, and I remember sort of liking it, but sort of not being real sure. It was definitely different than other kinds of art I had seen.
Yeah, it was odd. And even when he drew like Wolverine and stuff, like for Marvel Comics Presents, I didn't like it at the time, but now I'm like really liking it. So it's weird how your art style changes could change over time. Like art you used to like, you don't so much care for, and the things that you didn't like, you might like now. It's bizarre.
Yeah, tastes definitely change, but
And the story is kind of I think Sam Keith like created it and sort of plots it, but Messner Loebs is the guy who writes it.
oh, really? I remember
So
that.
you remember him from The Flash, he launched Wall-E, so
Well, he took up after
Oh, he
Mike
took up
Baron.
after Mike Baron, that's right, the
Yeah, but
Punisher.
only like it was only Baron was only on for like a little about a year. So Messner Loebs was really kind of the first like long-term writer.
Yeah. So
But
yeah, it's good stuff. And I own all the Max, but I don't own the original. I bought the reprints when IDW reprinted them. So I have all the Max singles, which they actually completed the whole run. Except I don't think they did the half from Wizard. So I think that's the only one they didn't reprint, but I had a couple of those. I used to send away for the Wizard 1/2 issues all the time.
they're hard to find nowadays, kind
Yeah,
of.
yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll switch companies and I'll talk about another Star comic. Kind of different from the ones I've talked about recently. This is Defenders of the Earth, number two of, as it turns out, four. There was only four issues of this published. They were, and apparently issue four ends on a cliffhanger that they never publish issue five, but they were planning at least another issue there.
You know, the Dynamite is kind of doing that now, but not with the Defenders of the Earth, but they're called King, the King properties.
Yeah, I saw that King's Quest or something they called it. And again, I think they only did five issues. That was a
They
few
had a
years
car
ago now, right?
cartoon too, like Defenders of the Earth was an animated series.
Yeah, that lasted for a while, and that's why like this comic came about as a result of that animated series. Because one of the things I thought was interesting, so these are the King Features Syndicate characters. You have Flash Gordon, Mandrake the Magician, the Phantom, and you have Mandrake's assistant. What is his name? But they're up against Ming the Merciless, and it's pretty neat. It definitely has a more compared to, say, Elf. the style of the cartoon, is the same way. It's a little more of a adventure styled. Lothar is the name of Ming's, or rather, Mandrake's assistant. But one of the neat things is interesting about the cart. It looks like the cartoon is this way too. Is that they have all their kids, like maybe to, have the age that
The
kids
legacy
watching
thing,
it. Yeah, it might be like you have Rick's or Flash's son Rick Gordon. You have Phantom's daughter Jetta, and then you have the adopted son of Mandrake, who's the youngest of them, named Kashin, and then Lothar's son LJ.
Which issue are you covering?
Number two.
Okay.
So, speaking of being able to be caught up, that's kind of what happens just on the first couple pages here within the context of things. It seems that Flash's wife, Rick's mother, was just killed. It happened. They basically have this crystal that contains her essence. It looks, sounds like it happened on this planet called Mongo, and it was a man working for Ming the Merciless, his Inquisitor, that basically tore her mind out of her body, and they have it. So Rick is just about to install that crystal into this advanced computer that he built, and it creates this AI with his mother's knowledge and personality called Dynex or Dynac X. So the Defenders are basically trying to get their base established, and they contact this group of aliens that Flash knows called the Cyryl, Cryl, in particular led by this guy named Morbius, and they're sort of like green skinned, almost like I don't know, they're kind of odd looking, but almost like reptilian in a way. But they have advanced building technology, so they're coming to help them build their new base much faster than they would normally be able to. But Ming the Merciless and his son, Prince Krotan, are watching, like they have surveillance on the defenders and aren't, planning on allowing them to succeed. Well, we see that Prince Krotan has ambitions to take his father's place. Ming sends ships to attack the Cyril as they're arriving to help out. Each of the characters, they get a nice chance to show their stuff. Flash gets into his ship and goes up and helps defend the Cyril alien ships from Ming's men. And Mandrake the Musician, he uses illusions to make the attackers think that his mansion is floating up into the sky, and it throws them off their trajectories, and they start crashing into each other and stuff. But the kids also, at least most of them, kind of get a feature too to get a sense of what's going on with them as well. Where especially at Kashin, Mandrake's adopted son, he tries to get Mandrake's attention, and he's like, "Mandrake's, this is important. I'm in the middle of something really important. Don't bother me right now." So he goes off feeling bad for him, like feeling bad about the whole thing, and wanders into this underground cave. Sort of gets into a situation of danger. He's being pursued by some of Mandrake's men, but as he's escaping, he finds that the cave actually leads back into the base that they've started, and he runs into Jedha, Phantom's daughter. And I thought that was kind of neat because I thought when he went off on his own, I thought he was going to get captured and that that was the way that the story was going to go. But instead, he goes, he finds his way back. He doesn't get captured. And again, he tries to get his, tries to get Mandrake's attention. Mandrake tells him, tells him to leave him alone again. And so again, I thought, like, the plot is going to be that they didn't, Kishin doesn't get a chance to tell him what he needs to tell him, and it has consequences and stuff. But Jedha, it's pretty cool. She says, "Do you see here, Mr. High and Mighty, what Kishin has to say is important too. If you didn't just brush him off all the time, you just might learn a thing or two." So actually, Mandrake stands corrected, asks for Kishin's apology, or apologizes to Kishin, and he's actually able to, they're actually able to make good use of Kishin's information. And the cavern that he found is ends up being key to the plans that they come up with after that. So skipping ahead, basically they use the technology of the Cyril to build much faster, their base out much faster. And then they are still under attack by Ming's people. So they basically, it turns out that this mountain that they're building in is an active volcano. So they purposely caused the controlled eruption at the top of the volcano. That the long and short of it is they think, make Ming think that he's killed them, that they've all died. So that they leave him, leave them alone for a little while, and they can finish their constructions and stuff like that. But yeah, I was pretty impressed with it. There's a lot of interesting character beats. Lothar and his son LJ, probably the only ones that don't really get as much focus, but everybody else kind of has their moment, including the kids. And we get some character beats and character moments from most of them. Jedha, it seems that she is used to living in Africa and is among the jungle beasts and stuff, and she just doesn't feel at home. So she's struggling with that. Overall, I liked it. I will say Fred Fredericks is not an inker that I'm familiar with. It was written by Michael Higgins. And the penciler, Alex Saviuk, I know.
His
Fred
only name that
Fredericks.
sounds familiar to me.
Alex Aviak, definitely. Fred Fredericks, his inks are a little light for my tastes, real thin lines, and especially like in the faces. Sometimes I feel like a little more variance the line weight, and it looks a little it looks a little unsolid at times, but I like the pencils underneath, from what I can tell. I think you could have applied a little heavier hand, but otherwise, yeah, it's a shame that it didn't last that long. But it makes me curious about the cartoon, because the cartoon, I think there was quite a few episodes of it. At least, like, I want to say 60 something.
I think you could find it at Target. I think I've seen it there.
Yeah, it looks like you can get it pretty cheap. And I know on Amazon it's only like
I
20
bought the
bucks.
I didn't buy that one because I've never watched the Defenders of the Earth. I watched Flash Gordon, the animated, and I did buy that because I was real fond of it. But I've always been fond of those characters. Like I'm still fond. I'm still reading them in the Dynamites. But for some reason, when they're together, they don't. This one might be an exception, but when they're together in Dynamite, they're not as good as when they're solo. I feel that same way as when they merged the Ninja Turtles and the Transformers and ROM and stuff. It feels weird. It feels awkward as hell. Like I just, it's hard for me to see this shared universe. And it's kind of hard for them because they're almost like people at a different time periods, you know? So it's just odd. Well, I guess Flash Gordon is not necessarily out of a different time. He just got sent to a world where it looked futuristic. But he was like a football player in our current world or a sports guy. Well, my choice is I'm still continuing my run down this failed attempt for Marvel to grab new readers at the 99% price point in the 90s. It's called Avengers Unplugged number 3. And this one is titled Ladies Night Out, and this was highly entertaining. This has stereotypical 90s art, very Liefeld, Jim Lee-ish merger of look. Let's see, the writer is Mike Lackley, and the pencils are by Malin Wyman. So, interesting team for an attempt to grab new readers. But this is really cool because Natasha and Crystal of the Inhumans, they're part of the Avengers now, Black Widow and Crystal. And they decide to go to like a Chippendale strip club, and they're out having a good time looking at a lot of male strippers. And there's an awkward moment when Quicksilver, one of the strippers dressed like Quicksilver, and if you know history, she's married to Quicksilver. Well, they're not married anymore, but they had a baby called Luna. And Quicksilver shows up. It's not really Quicksilver, but it's one of the strippers dressed as Quicksilver, and it
Weird.
causes her to blush because he's dressed as Quicksilver, and he says, "Hey, I'm Quicksilver. I'm the fastest man alive," and starts taking his clothes off really fast. So they're enjoying a bunch of ding-a-lings at the strip club. And meanwhile, the super adaptoid comes out of the water, and he's barely alive, but he's adapting. And he remembers his fight with Ben Grimm the Thing, and how Ben Grimm took him out. And he had alcohol, actually, in a previous issue, had defeated the super adaptoid, and when he was at the bottom of the ocean, he adapted to the alcohol that the thing had put on him. So they're at the strip club, and Quicksilver's there stripping in front of Crystal, and she's getting her wallet out, getting ready to put some dollar bills in his shorts, and a car comes crashing in through the strip club, and they have to get out of there and get the people evacuated. And they find out Ben Grimm is destroying part of New York, and they're like, "Oh crap, we have to fight Ben Grimm, our friend," because Crystal was a member of the Fantastic Four, so Ben Grimm was well known to her, and Natasha obviously knows of Ben Grimm, so they're like, "Oh, we have to fight our friend," but they realize early on that it's the Super Adaptoid, so they end up fighting this creature throughout the issue. And then there's like a weird break in between that has a subplot, which I'm interested in finding out what it is, but it's a absorbing man robbing a jewelry store to get a ring for he's bitching and complaining that, a ring should be 2 months' salary. Well, I have no salary, and I'm gonna go buy what is her name? Titana or whatever. He's gonna go buy from the Secret Wars. He's gonna go buy her a ring, and that's just a subplot. And then you see what does she say her name? Laura. Okay, I've talked about this in the previous episodes in the FF when I was going through an Epic collection, but Lyja is appearing as Laura, who's dating Johnny Storm because she doesn't want to tell him that she's Lyja the Skrull, but she's still in love with Johnny Storm. And here's where the artist really fucks up. But she comes to the Four Freedoms Plaza, and she tells the secretary, who's a robot, "Hey, I'm Laura. I'm here for Johnny Storm." And she says, "Of course, Miss Lyja." Like, she knows immediately who she is. And she said, "Reed Richards programmed me with delicate sensors so I could tell who you are from body heat and brainwave activities." So this secretary, robotic secretary, knows that she's Lyja the Skrull. And then this is where the artist messed up. Johnny comes, and man, he looks like the Hulk. He drew him so freaking muscular. It's freaking ridiculous.
Weird.
But he only drew him in that panel that muscular. So I like the fact that this is tying into current events with Elijah and Johnny, because that was a really good subplot that I really enjoyed in FF. And what else happens? They talk about the history of the Super Adaptoid and how he was created by the Mad Thinker, and gives a little bit of history as they're fighting him. Crystal makes up another thing based out of elements because she's an elemental. But every time that the Super Adaptoid hits this elemental thing, it actually hurts her if she's close enough. So that was also interesting. But the Adaptoid didn't adapt to electricity at this time, I guess, because they're man, he says something funny here. He says, "You will find, wench, that your meager gyrations will be no match for me." So Black Widow's like jumping around trying to avoid him, and he says that. And as she's jumping around a McDonald's sign, which it's clearly McDonald's, it says over 10 billion served and has the arches, the Super Adaptoid, who looks like the Thing, punches it and gets electrified, and they then zap him. The elemental zaps him, and now he's like this black dust who's trying to reform and adapt. But while they're there, Code Blue, who I remember from the Mighty Thor at this time, shows up to pick him up and take him to the prison. So yeah, it was a pretty funny story. I liked it.
That's pretty bizarre. Who did you say the artist was on that?
This is Manlin Wyman. I don't think he's very popular, but he does have definitely like a, If you look at his style, it's very Liefeld-esque. Like he's trying to mimic the Liefeld look. Totally.
Did they do a lot of
I had a
those?
take. Well, if you look at the way he drew Johnny in this picture, it's like he was channeling Liefeld when he drew Captain America with the big chest. You know, the one that everybody makes fun of?
Right.
That's what Johnny Storm kind of looked like. But
Jeez.
later on, he fixed it. Like when they're walking away, he looks more like he has the physique of Johnny Storm. I don't know what happened there.
That's weird.
It's only 99 cents. They probably said, we can't pay an editor. Let's just do it.
Did they do a lot of those 99 cent ones, or?
No, there was a Fantastic Four Unplugged. There was Avengers Unplugged. They didn't run more than 12 issues. And there was the most successful one was the Untold Tales of Spider-Man by Kurt Busiek.
Oh, yeah, okay, that one sounds
Yeah,
familiar.
that one lasted a long time. It's the only one that was successful. But there's
That's funny.
some this is totally a period when I wasn't getting any Marvel, like nothing. But it has my interest. There was a Cosmic Powers Unlimited quarterly series that had Silver Surfer, Warlock, Captain Marvel, Jack of Hearts, Thanos, and the Guardians of the Galaxy. That looks interesting. There's an ad for Forceworks. This is a one-page special by Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning, and Jim Calafiore, with inks by Peter Palmiotti, which I'm friends with on Facebook. But this is a 48-page thriller of his origin, the origin of Century. So like I didn't know what the hell that was. There's this thing called Tales of the Marvels, Inner Demons, written by Mariano Nasiza. I wonder if he's related to Fabian. And painted by Bob Wakelin. Never heard of this shit. From the days when the Atlantean Prince was a pauper, it's like a Namor series. The Avengers I wasn't collecting at this time either, but it was Bob Harris and Terry Cavanaugh with Mike Diodato. So there's, man, I wasn't aware of much that was happening at this time.
Me neither. Yeah, I would definitely. I was out of Marvel or comics in general, and I wasn't. I really haven't gone back to revisit that stuff.
Yeah, I've left Marvel so many times, never left DC, never left Valiant, but I've other companies I have. And Marvel, I tend to do that for whatever reason. But this was entertaining. It was ridiculous, but it was entertaining. I mean, I thought it was hilarious. They're at a strip
Nice.
club and then she's getting a
The...
dance by Quicksilver and a car flies through the window. Like, how does that happen? Not even through the window, because strip clubs don't have windows. This comes right through the building.
definitely sounds amusing,
And a
I'll say
bunch of
that.
naked dudes are running around screaming. Ah!
Nice. All right, so I have one more. It's another DC issue with backup story. This is Jonah Hex, Volume 1, Number 54. And on the cover, El Papagayo returns. Jonah is tied by the throat to this device in a well with a donkey basically like attached to the outside, the where you'd use the donkey to walk around the well and draw it up. But if this donkey walks, it's going to choke him. And El Papagayo is up at the top of the well as well. It says, "The strap tightens around your neck with every turn. Adios, Hex." The story is called Trapped in the Parrot's Lair. El Papagayo is the parrot in Spanish. It was written by Michael Fleischer, with art by Tony DeZuniga. And it starts out with Jonah Hex in Rosie's. Y'all sure do know your business, Nora, honey. If ever a woman made me feel as good all over as I feel right this minute, I surely can't re recollect it. You ain't felt nothing yet, sugar. Jonah's getting a bath by a working woman in a corset and lingerie, and she tells him she's just gotta get all the dirt off of him before they can do anything else. But then a man busts down the door with a gun. The lady's right, Hex. Is a man stinks as much as you do. Why, he just got to do something about it quick as he can. It's actually two men. So they're trying to catch Jonah, in a vulnerable position. But the one guy gets close enough that Jonah's able to grab him by the tie, necktie kind of thing that he's got on, slams his head on the edge of the bathtub that he's in, and stabs him. And he uses him kind of as a shield so that his other brother, or this the other guy's brother, can't get a good shot at him. And Jonah gets a hold of his gun, takes care of the other guy. But unfortunately, after he's dressed, he's leaving. He's got to pay an extra dollar for his visit to clean up the mess that he made. But he takes his horse down the center of town, and people are noticing him, and he's got a reputation. They know who he is. And notably, a man goes running off to the telegraph office in a hurry. And it turns out then we switch to a plantation house near Richmond, Virginia. A bunch of men are reporting to a Mr. Turnbull that that Jonah Hex is dead outside of Fort Charlotte. And I guess that's something that happened in Jonah Hex number 32, according to the editor's note. But then
I
Mr.
think that
Turnbull's. Go
Turnbull
on.
actually made an appearance in Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh yeah. I haven't watched any of that yet. But I know they jump around in time, so I could see that.
That name sounds familiar to me.
Okay. That's cool. Mr. Turnbull's servant comes in to tell him that they've received a telegram. So that's the from the guy that we just saw. That Jonah Hex is alive and well in Clementine Springs. So Turnbull is pissed. He breaks a bottle. It cuts his hand. He's bleeding all over the place. And so then he tells the men, "You better get back out there." So Jonah, he goes to check into a hotel. It's been a long day. He had a bad meal. Steak was about as appetizing as sucking on an old boot. And as for that strawberry shortcake, I've seen tastier looking whipped cream running down the inside wall of a barn. That's like super nasty. I don't know what he's getting at there, but so he goes to check into his room, but then he senses somebody, and it's a it's Colonel Sanchez. Apparently back in Jonah Hex issues 9 and 10, he hired Jonah on a vital mission for the Mexican government. So he jogs Hex's memory, and I guess on that mission, Jonah almost got killed by El Papagayo and his banditos. And Colonel Sanchez has come to talk to him about El Papagayo, as it turns out. They thought that Papagayo had been killed back in that story by a woman named Estrelita. But apparently, Papagayo was found by peasants, nursed back to health, and causing now lots of problems. And since Jonah's the only one who has gone into a Papagayo's complex and returned and lived to tell. That's why he's come to see him, and that President of Mexico has offered is going to offer Jonah $10,000 to go get El Papagayo and bring him out dead or alive. So Jonah takes the job. He starts, heading that way. It's not long before he runs into some of Papagayo's men, and they take shot at Jonah on horseback. They think that they got him, but it was just a decoy. He set up like a straw man basically on his horse, and so he could get the jump on them. He ties them up and takes the outfit of one of them, so that he can get close to Papagayo's fortress of sorts, it's complex. Unfortunately for him, the guy spots the whole thing. Madre de Dios, this gringo, he has tied up Jose and Garcia and now rides towards our encampment, disguised in Jose's clothing. I must go quickly and pray that I can warn El Papagayo in time. So Jonah shows up. So he's gonna go in disguise, pretend that he's Jose. Please forgive me, Papagayo. Oh, it is you, Jose. Come in, come in. There is no need to ask forgiveness of your old friend, etc. And he says, "I've been expecting you, Jonah Hex." And he whips his hat off. And El Papagayo, true to his name, he has a parrot on his shoulder. A parrot who he's taught a new word. He says, "Tell me, Pepito, when we catch Jonah Hex, how are we going to kill him?" "Squawk, slowly, squawk." So a guy smacks Jonah across the back of the head with a rifle, knocks him out, and he wakes up in the predicament that we saw him on the cover. It doesn't take him too long to get out of that situation, though. It's just the over the course of a page, because they didn't take one of his knives away from him, so he was able to cut his way out of the binds and climb out of the well. And as it turns out, it is not a Papagayo that's outside of the well, but it is one of his men, and he's standing there with a rifle. So Jonah doesn't have much of a chance to climb out and not get shot. Fortunately, all of a sudden, the man holding the rifle gets stabbed in the back. And there's a woman in a red cloak that did this. And she leads him out, explains that she's Carmelita, the woman of El Papagayo. But she's also working for Colonel Sanchez to spy on the bandidos. So she leads him to some horses or caballos and shows him where his pistolas and clothes are, and takes him just a little bit beyond the complex where he'd be safe from El Papagayo. And then she has to get back before she notices he's gone. She's like, "You're safe here." And then, but someone says, "Lord, you sure ain't safe from us." And it's the men that were sent by what's his face? Mr. Turnbull.
Turnbull.
So he's out of the frying pan into the fire kind of situation. But Tony DeZuniga's art is great. It's such a perfect match to Jonah Hex stories. It's fortunate that him and Michael Fleischer were on the book for so long. And very entertaining story, very fun one to read out loud with Jonah's accent and the Mexican accents and stuff written. That was a 17-page story, and there's a backup. Tejano. Apparently, this backup started in the previous issue, and it looks like it only ran for 4 issues. I don't have any of those issues, but this is actually kind of interesting. I guess it must not have been popular, super popular, but it's kind of interesting from a historical perspective. It's written by Dan Mishkin and Gary Cohen. It is very far from Blue Devil. And the art's by someone, T. Yates. But it got me, like, on Wikipedia, like, looking up some history, because Tejano, he is a Texas Ranger. His real name is Antonio Ramirez. Tejano, I think, is just Texan, and means Texan in Spanish. But so he's a Texas Ranger, he's in a it's in a circumstance where he's he was born under Spanish rule when Spain controlled the area, and when he was growing up, so he's been captured by General Emilio Rojas of Mexico, and in the conflict over Texas between Mexico and United States. And the man that is told to guard him is a man that he grew up with named Juan. He was once closer to him than a brother. And so as they like get on their horses and they're the Mexican army is, you know, Antonio is bound up with ropes, and as they're walking along, him and Juan end up reminiscing, and most of the story is a flashback to when they were kids, and Juan's sister, it seems like Antonio kind of has a crush on her, trying to impress her, and it tells about how they were take their horses out and they come across some Comanche raiders stealing their horses. And so they try to pursue the Comanche raider, one in particular, how they're having difficulty. Like, it talks about the difficulty of using a primitive rifle of the time on horseback versus bow and arrow. But they eventually... it's not their skill that brings down the Comanche. It is just a accident, a circumstance. A couple of the horses, like one of the horses gets in the way of his horse that he's riding and he goes flying over and the horse falls on him, and breaks his arm. So they meet, you know, so they talk to this guy. He tells him, his name is Naname and that he is, of the Nermernu, which is the Comanche name for the people. That's what they call themselves. And they talk about their, you know, they must amass a lot of horses, like even if it means stealing them to show their power. And as it turns out, the Comanches at this point are working with the Mexican government. And they take him to the Comanche war chief, and it turns out to be this Naname. And at first you think, oh, maybe he'll be remembered for saving his life. Antonio even says, you know, I saved your life years ago. But unfortunately for Tejano, for Antonio, Naname calls him Tejano. He also remembers, and we saw this in the story as well, that they took back the horses that they stole, but they always also took the horse he was riding, or they actually had to kill it because it had broken its legs. And then they made Naname ride back to his people on a donkey, and so he was shamed before the other Comanches, and he has not forgotten that. So yeah, it was pretty cool. I like the historical aspect of it, and that it got me like on Wikipedia sort of reading up on the history of the conflict in the area and stuff. I thought it was kind of neat. Good for a backup tale, you know, like
Yeah,
a
cool.
short story. So
Very cool. So you bought this in the dollar bin or what?
I think I found this for even cheaper, like 50 or 25 cents. It's like the only time I've ever found Jonah. I found a handful, like maybe 8 or 9 issues. The only time I've ever seen Jonah Hex in a place like that.
Yeah, at some point I need to go back and finish my All Star Western, where he first appeared.
Yeah.
But I have all the Jonah Hex, and I have all the Hex, and all
Nice.
of the Palmiotti Hex, and yeah, I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Gonna place my comic shop order today. I'm
Yeah,
gonna get some more Punisher
isn't that the like ritual for
for this podcast. Yeah.
yeah.
So I continued my journey with Ghost Rider. I bought these from mycomicshop.com too. This is issue 48 and 49. This is the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider, except that right now Danny Ketch is dead. And we have Vengeance, who's taken over the book and seems to have gotten the power of Ghost Rider as well. And these are weird issues. Like the first, I think I covered 46 and 47, and I really enjoyed those ones because they had Dredd, who was working for Hellgate, go and kill all of the cop's friends. The cop is actually Vengeance. His name is Mike Baudelio. And in this one, he's kind of losing his shit, and he's captured Dredd, and he's beating the shit out of him. And the other cops are trying to hold him off, saying, "Hey, you can't do that. You're a policeman." And he's just frustrated. And he said, "I need to take like a leave of absence," and he needs to. But Dredd actually has like Wolverine abilities where he's able to regenerate himself and stuff. So he regenerates himself. Another character called Rack, who we've seen in a few issues back, comes to bail him out and attacks the police office. And he has to turn to Vengeance, and Spider-Man appears. So it's pretty much Spider-Man and Vengeance trying to work together to fight these two. And at the end, they escape, but Hellgate is just pissed. He wants them to capture Vengeance because he wants to steal his power, I guess. And they failed their job, so they're on the shit list. So Dredd and Rack are on the shit list. And Spider-Man is trying to teach Vengeance, "Hey, you're not supposed to kill anybody." And Vengeance is like, "Fuck that. These people will kill a lot of people." But Spidey's still sticking to his guns and trying to teach him what's right. The next issue is really weird. This is almost like Vengeance team up, because the next issue is the Hulk, and this is when the Hulk is really, really smart. And he's got like a jumpsuit. It's ugly as hell. But this one, Vengeance, they're actually being tracked by these two guys. I don't even think they name them, but he sends these two guys after Vengeance, and the Hulk appears for, I don't know, some random reason other than a team up, and he appears at the cemetery. So I don't know if he's investigating where Ghost Rider went, or Danny Ketch went. and he runs into vengeance or what? It's kind of ambiguous why he's even there. But he shows up and he's like, he starts talking to him rationally, and Vengeance loses his shit and starts. He kicks the Hulk in the groin, like hits him in the nuts, and that pisses Hulk off, and Hulk starts beating the hell out of him. And the two guys that are supposed to capture Vengeance are like, they're in these big armored suits, and they're like, should we just let them beat the shit out of each other and then see what happens? But one of them jumps the gun, and they end up teaming up to fight these two dudes. And that's pretty much it. Yeah, it was kind of a weird story, but the skull that's at the cemetery where Danny Ketch is kind of like lit on fire at the end. And this leads us into issue 50. So what I'm thinking is going to happen is Ghost Rider's going to return to his book. I think. And I don't know what'll happen to Vengeance. Vengeance
Interesting.
is totally like taking Ghost Rider and making into like a an Extreme Studios or Young Blood type character. He's over the top, like his skull ribs you can see. And I should mention the creative team because it's a really good creative team. It's Doug Mankey and Ron Garney. So
Oh, yeah.
I
That's
like
good.
Ron Garney's art. I
Yeah.
always have. And he draws a good spider. There's a good Spider-Man splash page in here where you see him all contorted and spinning webs everywhere. So yeah, I like his artwork. And the story is entertaining. It's not what's really nice is these 90s books. When I tend to go to my comic shop, I'll go for the fine instead of the very fine.
Yeah.
They look really nice. So I think the 90s, the you can't really tell the difference between fine and very fine when they ship it to you. So if you go to my comic shop, I'd recommend going with the fine books 'cause they're pretty damn awesome looking.
That's always good.
Yeah. And that's all I have.
That's all I got as well.
I have really bad allergies. I was going mute because, man, when you were talking about Jonah Hex, I just had to blow my nose like a bunch of times. I had like a
That
sneeze attack. Harley
time of
came in and
year.
I was petting her, and she's like rubbing in the grass, and I think I like touched my face, and it just really sparked some allergic reaction. But you can reach us at Geek Bunch Retrocast. And hopefully, in a few weeks, we will all be together. But what I'd like to do is keep the wheels moving on this. And there's three of us, so my hope is that when one of us can't make it, that the other two can make it,
Right,
and
yeah.
we can keep the show going. So, plus it keeps me busy on my. I like this show because it makes me go through my older stuff. Like, go to my long boxes and pick something out. Or go to
Yeah.
my Epic collections and read something out of that.
Yeah, it's fun to find, it's fun to pick stuff out to read.
One of the things I've been going
That's
through that I just want to mention real quickly is this Action Heroes archive, which is old space adventures from the Charlton era of Captain Atom. And this one issue I read was really, really, really dark. Like, it had three stories in them, and all were very similar about other nations launching nuclear missiles against the United States. And every issue is like Captain Atom had to go into space and disintegrate these nuclear missiles. So like I guess what I'm getting at is like in the 60s they told stories that were kind of terrifying. Like if you're a kid reading this, it's like I wonder if you ever thought, well, what happens if Captain Atom can't blow the missiles out of space?
Yeah.
It's pretty It's pretty dark. But
Yeah, it's
anyway,
interesting that
yeah.
at that time, trying to confront the anxiety about that kind of thing happening.
Yeah. It's like, don't worry, kids. We have Captain Adam.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
So
it has some relevance again.
it does. We're getting back into a similar Cold War situation with other countries, so
Yeah, seems like it.
it's another dark time, so maybe Captain Adam has to come to the rescue again.
Yeah. I need him
But
to return.
you can reach Chris at MythMakingETC on the Twitters, and at Myth or MythMakingETC at gmail.com, and I am Mike at comicbooknoise.com, and at Mike Myers Brunch on the Twitters, and our website is geekbrunchpodcast.com, where you can find us on Facebook under the same name with spaces in between the words, and click the like button there, and tell them about you've been doing regularly your podcast. Do you want to plug that real quick?
Yeah, from Kid to Flash. Let's see. Lately, I've been getting the episodes out pretty consistently. I try to do at least two of them a month, and we've just after 45 episodes, I've finally arrived at Wally becoming the Flash. And this last episode I released covered Wally's involvement in Crisis on Infinite Earths, where he first puts on the Flash costume. So, and I've got the next one in progress, so hopefully I'll be keeping that consistent for a little while. We're going to be, there's actually some stuff that goes on before Flash number one launches. He appeared in a bunch of issues of New Teen Titans, and then you have the Legends miniseries to go after that. So it'll be a few episodes before we get to Flash number one, but slowly chugging along there, but it's kind of a milestone.
Yeah,
So
it's a lot of
yeah.
flash reading.
Yeah.
It's a lot of sticking to not getting distracted too and going squirrel.
Yeah, well, and I've done plenty of that. There's been times where I've gone on hiatus or taken a little longer to get from one episode to
Yeah.
the next, but been sort of consistent lately, so.
Yeah. All right, well, you have a good Sunday, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you. Good
Thank
too.
thanks
Good talking
thanks for
to
thanks for recording.
you. Yeah,
I
thank
wa I
you,
wanted to
good
do this
sir.
'cause next weekend I have in-laws coming.
Okay.
So if you guys want to record one, go for it. I'll gladly get it out. I'll be getting the me and Rob recorded one. I'll put it out today.
Okay. Well, every 2 weeks usually works pretty good for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll
Let's
talk to you
see.
later.
All right.
All right,
Adios.
bye.